Okay, before I welcome lovely Professor Peter Skelton to talk with us, I just want to focus all your minds. When we come to the end of this paper, we're being asked, as on page one, to note the following and to approve the following. And it's a development of a plan change, it's a timeline set out in Appendix 2, and a review of the RPS. It is not approving everything that is in the arguments, including paragraphs 13 and 14. We're not approving those. They could easily be changed and taken on board. We're just doing the very thin basics. Peter, it's all yours. Sorry for calling you Peter. I'm a Kiwi. So.
It's perfectly all right, Mary.
Good.
Thank you very much. And can you hear me?
Yep.
Is it on?
Yeah, it is on. I think it could be wiggled a little bit closer to you, though.
And thank you once again for having me at your place. It's becoming rather familiar to me. I've had a chat with Peter Constantine before today because it was he who asked me if I'd come and be with you this morning, and I'm very happy to do that. I, of course, as you know, am the author of the report that forms the basis of the Minister's recommendations to you, which you're here to discuss today. So we can come to that a little later on. Peter asked me if, first of all, I would talk a little bit about my experience with the Environment Canterbury in the context of water management planning, and I thought I'd spend a few moments doing that, and then if you've got any questions about that, I'm happy to answer them, or you can intervene at any time. I haven't got a formal presentation. And then I thought I'd move on to your position and talk a little bit about where I see that heading. So, as probably most of you, if not all of you, know, for 22 odd years I was a judge in the Environment Court. Did a lot of cases in this part of the country and indeed all over the country. When I finished doing that in 2000, I went to Lincoln University and taught environmental law for about 6 years. And I had the pleasure of being with Prince Charles last week when he came to Lincoln University to talk about the environment on a world scale. And it was pretty impressive stuff, I can assure you. I also, while I'm on that, was a very close colleague of Professor Ali Memon, who came from Dunedin, was at Otago University and sadly died about a week or so ago in Auckland. And there's a memorial service, if any of you are interested, at Lincoln on Friday the 13th of December at 2:30 in the afternoon. They're having a memorial service for him there. A lovely man. Peter will have known it. Yeah. So your chair, who was the Minister for the Environment at that time, got cracking and got the Waitaki allocation plan in place through a statutory process, and that provided me with about 2 years of work. because I heard all the resource consent applications that she had called in under that process. So I had a couple of years of dealing with the Waitaki allocation plan and the resource consent process that flowed from that. The government decided to dispense with the services of the elected councils at Canterbury and appoint seven commissioners in their place, and I was one of those. So from 2010 to 2016, I was one of seven commissioners administering the regional council. Now, the only thing I want to say about that is that contrary to the popular myths that pervade that process, we were not appointed to increase the irrigation in Canterbury, nor were we appointed to increase intensive farming in Canterbury. We were appointed, amongst other reasons, to put in place a robust planning, statutory planning framework for Canterbury, which didn't really exist at that time. There was a natural resources regional plan, which was in the final processes of decision making, but it was not particularly adequate for all purposes, and in particular, it had no rules about water quality matters. So we set about completing a review of the regional policy statement at the higher level, and there was also in place at that time the Canterbury Water Management Strategy, which is a non-statutory document that has a lot of vision and principles and processes set out in it, and that was signed off as a collaboratively developed document for Canterbury in 2009, just before we got there. And the commissioners picked that up, set up the zone committee process across the region with the catchment groups, really, they are. Reviewed the regional policy statement and got that in place, and then set about developing a new regional land and water regional plan for Canterbury, and that's where Peter Constantine came in, because from the planning point of view, from the staff point of view, it was Peter who led that process. And that land and water regional plan, which has been in existence since we notified it in 2012, for the first time, and it's hard to believe in a way, for the first time in a place, in a region like Canterbury, contained water quality limits. The loss of nutrients. Hard to believe that we'd got into the 21st century without that, but we had. And that was the big change that that plan made.
What date was that?
We developed it over 2011. I think we notified it in 2012.
August 2012.
And it went. One of the things we had the benefit of, I suppose, at ECAM was that the government had legislated to provide for a one-stop shop hearing process. In other words, there were no rights of appeal to the Environment Court. So in recognition of that, the commissioners took the view and developed the policy that what we would do was we would put in place and put together hearing panels that would be the equivalent, really, of an Environment Court hearing panel, and we did that. And my former colleague, Judge Shepherd, who actually did the Waitaki allocation plan, he was the chair of the hearing panel, and we had a man called Van Voorthuizen, Rob Van Voorthuizen, a very, very experienced planner and engineer person, and an Aotearoa person, on all our hearing panels for those processes. They did the regional policy statement. They did the regional plan. And those processes, you know, they weren't walks in the park, but we ended up with a pretty robust planning framework going forward for Canterbury in terms of water management. In that way, we fulfilled the requirement that the government had expected of us. It's important, I think, to understand that the regional plan, and I think you're going to have a similar framework, or that's what you're thinking about, a land and water regional plan, And it's called a land water regional plan because you control things like nutrient losses through land use controls rather than consents on discharges, for example. And that was one of the things I was always very keen on doing. And when I became a commissioner and I had my first meeting with the planning team at Environment Canterbury, I told them that those were my aspirations and expectations. And interestingly enough, their eyes lit up because they were looking to do catchment-based planning and controlling losses, nutrient losses, through land use control processes. But, of course, the regional plan will have a lot more. I think there are 39 different water-associated topics in the Canterbury Land and Water Regional Plan, and I guess there'll be a similar one there. There's all sorts of responsibilities that the Regional Council has. We tend to focus on the one that's topic of the moment, but it's important to understand, I think, that the Regional Plan is much wider than that, and you'll have slope stability rules, and you'll have all sorts of rules about sewage disposal and all that kind of stuff. You'll have a lot of other things that you are responsible for regulating in that plan. Are you going to have an architecture like they've got the Land and Water Regional Plan with sub-regional
as close
sections?
As we can, but yeah. We've got the National Planning Standard to worry about as well.
Yes, you do, yeah. But you can still do it, I think, within that. And develop your FMUs. When I talk sub-regional, I'm sort of referring to the areas where you have your FMUs, which I think some of you or most of you are familiar with.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And that's where you identify the values, of course, of those particular parts of your region. I think that's a very good model because you can develop those over a period of time with the benefit of consultation with the people who are relevant to those areas. So the Land and Water Regional Plan for Canterbury was developed and put in place and made operative, and I'm skiting now. The Planning Institute gave us a prize for it, and Peter was with me when we went to collect that. So I'm quite chuffed about that. And the Planning Institute doesn't dish these things out lightly. So that's what I was doing as a commissioner, and for the last 3 years, from 2016 to 2019, I was one of six appointed councillors, and we had seven elected councillors on the council, and that was a very interesting experience and I think it's never happened before and probably won't ever happen again in New Zealand, but there we had a mixture of appointed and elected people at the regional council level, and I think it's fair to say that we work pretty well together. We very quickly established a rapport between all of us, and we identified with some pretty frank and open discussions where we wanted to go in the next 3 years, and having done that, we worked towards achieving those ends. And when we finished, we were just in the process of doing Plan Change 7, to the Land and Water Regional Plan, which covers the Opahee and the Waimakariri catchments and some other bits and pieces in North Canterbury, and that had got to the point where it's now available for hearing in front of an independent hearing panel, which you won't be surprised to learn will be chaired by my colleague David Shepherd. And his team, when he's finished dealing with the national policy statement, which I think he's doing right now. I think the message that I would like to give you from my time with the Regional Council, which was nearly 10 years, was that very early on we established a very good rapport with the staff, and I don't mean just the planning staff, with the science people, with the enforcement people, with the river engineers. If you know river engineers, I don't know if any of you are river engineers, but they're a pretty independent sort of lot. And we got on with them. But for the purposes of developing the Land and Water Regional Plan, I think the key to our success in the end, and success came, of course, because we were able to put a robust case to Shepherd's panel. And they were no pushover. And they weren't going to just lie down because we were the Regional Council. We were able to put a robust case that supported what we were doing. And the reason we were able to do that was that the councillors and the staff worked together as a team to develop that instrument. And so the staff were confident in going in front of the panel that they were truly representing the work that the councillors or the commissioners, you know, had signed off on. And I think it's terribly important that you do try to establish a level of trust between those two, the governance and the staff, so that when you do go in front of an independent hearing panel, as I'm sure, well, you will, because this will be part of that compulsory process that I'm going to talk about in a moment, you will have a robust case. So that's really all I want to say about my time with the Canterbury Regional Council.
Let me just ask a couple of questions there,
yeah,
Peter.
Sure.
Why? What was the reason that the council has collapsed?
The elected council?
The elected council, and replaced with appointed people.
I think there were probably a number, but I think fundamentally they were a split council, rural and urban, they couldn't get agreement round the table on the way forward for their planning, amongst other things. And I think there was a culture in the organisation that I don't think is a good one, whereby councillors would nobble staff members and try to get them to give them advice to produce an argument. You know, it wasn't a good culture, I don't think.
Thank you.
And that all changed for the better. Right. But I want to emphasise that, you know, I had nothing to do with what the government of the day did in doing what it did. But the reasons they did it were not the reasons that you publicly hear about. If we had been put in place to increase irrigation, then we failed miserably, actually, because it was all consented before we got there, pretty much. But I think that's my take on that.
Thank you.
And I did some work with the Regional Council earlier on because I was doing those Waitaki cases. Yeah. Anybody else got any questions about that? Okay, let's come to you then. Amongst other things, I think you've had and I'm conscious that there are new councillors around the table, I think you've had a sort of a 101, haven't you, from some Ministry for the Environment staff about the RMA?
No.
Did you have?
Have we?
Part of the induction. So you understand anyway that there's a hierarchy of instruments under the RMA with national policy statements, regional policy statements, those things. Yeah. And it's a statutory process. And in the case of water management, if the bill that's currently before Parliament goes through, and I'm pretty confident it will, in the water management area, it will establish a fast-track hearing process for water management plans, which will involve developing hearing panels that will have environment court personnel input and local authority input. And it'll be a process whereby, following on an Auckland model, those panels, which will be independent panels, appointed by the minister and by the local authorities, will go around. Will go about hearing these regional plans, and if the councils accept their recommendations, then that will be the end of the matter, subject to matters of law. And if the regional council doesn't accept it, then it'll go to the Environment Court. I don't want to get into too much detail about that. The important thing is that there is going to be a hearing panel process provided for by statute, which will be compulsory for all regional councils to follow. It mightn't be in place, it won't be in place for your deemed permit plan change, I don't think. I think the timing for that is the timing for the passing of the bill, as I understand it, is the middle of 2020, but it will be in place for other processes that you will be embarking upon. And I think that's quite a good process. It's not quite what I recommended when I made a submission to the Select Committee about 2 years ago, 3 years ago, but it's getting there anyway. And the Minister's very happy with it, and that's what they propose to do. So what I wanted to say, you know, having said that, that you're working towards developing, you know, your work programme in, you know, developing these reviewed instruments and new instruments towards hearings of that kind, as time goes on. The next thing I want to make very clear to you is that you're not alone. It may be because I put the rule over you, if you like, and made a report about it, and that got a certain amount of publicity, that you think, oh gosh, you know, it's us that the government is getting at and people are getting at and so forth. No, you're not alone here. There's 16, including you, there's 16 regional authorities in this country, and every one of them has got to have a fit-for-purpose planning regime by 2025, end of 2025. That's the current objective, if you like, of the government. So actually, if you think about it for a moment, in a sense, what we've been doing together for the last 9 months or so puts you ahead of the game. I can tell you that there are other regional authorities in New Zealand who aren't anywhere near where you are now. So you have an opportunity in this council to become an exemplar for regional water management planning in New Zealand, if you really want to be. The government last year did a review. You know, now all regional councils have to put in what are called PIPs, implementation programs, progressive implementation programs. You've done that. Those were analysed by some people in the ministry last year, and a report was produced, which you may well have seen. I don't know. but in it, it identifies where all the councils are. And it's worth looking at. That process is going to be repeated starting, well, the Ministry's working on the work program now. It's going to be repeated at the beginning of next year. And you're going to be asked to update your PIPs. And those are going to be analysed. All the regional councils are going to be looked at by the Ministry to see where they're at and how they're going to get to 2025, end of. And although the detail of this has not yet been worked out, I think I can go as far as to say to you that the Minister and I are in discussions about a process that will involve me in that process along with staff, so that I will be visiting other regional councils and saying, right, where's your work program for, you know, notification in 2023, that kind of thing. So the point I want to make is that everybody's in this across the country. And it's not just you. And you might, if you were able, you might find that you get the first look at the new hearing process, if you got your instrument, in place in a timely fashion. I can't promise that, but what I'm saying is that if you proceed with the work program that you have talked about today and are still talking about, you, I'm quite confident this will be ahead of a number of other regional authorities in this country in terms of achieving the objectives of what we anticipate, what's already in the National Policy Statement and what we anticipate will be in the 2020 National Policy Statement, which we should know the answer to probably before the end of this year. Yeah, because I think the panel that's looking at got a report to the Minister, I think, by the end of this month. I think it's important to do it in the right order. And when I was doing my investigation work, a number of parties made that point to me, and I've referred to it in the report. In other words, there's not much point in doing significant work with the regional plan before you've got the regional policy statement in place, because it's a regional policy statement that has to be given effect to. And those timings, I think, are quite important. You end up, as we did in Canterbury, by following that, with a pretty robust statutory process. Of course, the big single difference between you and other regional councils is that you've got the deemed permits in your region. There are some in Canterbury too, in the Waitaki Valley, but they don't present a problem because the Waitaki allocation plan makes provision for them. So that's the thing that is the issue, I guess, one of the issues for you, and it's the one that I addressed in my report, and it's the one that the Minister has modified my report to make his recommendations to you. I'm happy to talk about that a bit more if you want to. I don't think there's much more I want to say. Thank you.
Thank you, Peter. Can we open it up for questions from people? Hilary, Michael?
I've got some questions, and I don't know whether just I would like Mr. Skelton to respond to some of the challenges in the ORUG report. Is that appropriate for me to ask some of those questions?
Sure, go for it. Which report, by the way?
This is Peter's report.
Peter's report.
Do you mean the one that you've got today in your...
The one that...
That's in your papers for today?
The...
The one that Gary sent through.
Yeah, the one Gary sent through.
Oh, okay. No, either of them. I mean, it's in the mail. I haven't read it yet.
Oh, that's the consultative... the Manuhirikia?
This is the...
Yes.
Otago Water Users Group.
The Users Group.
Yeah. Yeah. Professional consultant assessment of Professor Skelton's report.
Oh, okay. No, I haven't seen that.
It only arrived a day or two ago.
Okay.
So I thought it might be helpful for them to understand what you might say in response to some of these.
Okay. So, there you go. Yeah.
The first one I particularly noticed is that they're suggesting that, well, I'll quote them, the Skelton report goes on to suggest that only 25% of the flow can be taken in other regions, and it's talking about 75% of the Manuhirikia River available flow that you've estimated. And it says this is factually incorrect. In that many rivers in Canterbury are allocated to comparable levels or even worse compared to the Manuhirikia.
Well, I don't think I can satisfactorily resolve that for you. I'm going on the evidence that was presented to me, and the Canterbury, we've stopped over allocation in Canterbury, so that's not right.
It says NIWA's NPS support document definition and calculation of freshwater quantity over allocation for MFE. So
does not align with the Skelton report. That's the rest of the sentence. Rest of the sentence.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
So you don't have sort of a response or.
Well, again, I say I think what I've said in my report was the evidence that was given to me. It's the 25-85 or 25-75. That sort of ratio. That is definitely not across the country.
Yes, I'm only asking you.
Yeah, that's my response.
I'm not disagreeing with your report in any way. I'm just saying it's really useful to have out here your response.
Yeah.
Give you a chance to help them understand where you're coming from.
Yeah.
They take some issue, and I'll quote them again. The author seems to anecdotally suggest that the water users and probably the most water short catchment in Otago are wasteful with their water.
And can you refer to me which paragraph that's in?
This is under allocation. Have you got the ORUG?
Yes, I have. Yeah. I've got it open
so
in front of me.
Under allocation.
Yes. Okay, thank you.
So, and this is where you're talking about you think people are wasting water to maintain their allocation, I think.
I didn't think that's what I was told.
Yes. So,
I'm reporting.
Yes, I think you said anecdotally.
Yes.
So, they're saying. The author
and there was evidence of that. There was actually photographic evidence.
Yeah. The author's generic accusations of wasteful water use are unfair and unhelpful. Do you think, and this is a question that follows on from there, do you think that it would be useful to actually get something better than anecdotal evidence about that? Or?
Well, I did. I had photographs of water running over the ground and going to waste.
Yeah. And several cases or lots of cases?
I had photographs in two or three different places.
Can we just hang on for a minute? Because I'm actually now reading this and thinking this is a bit unfair. You haven't got it in front of you. And I just feel most uncomfortable. I didn't realise that's what you were asking me about, Hilary, in all fairness.
I mean, I'm happy to have a session with you about my report if you want to at some point.
Yeah.
Well, perhaps.
But I'm not sure that it's going to achieve very much.
Perhaps part of the... It was really just because if it's... This document, the Skelton report is public, and this document is...
Not public. Received by one member.
Well, it'll be public any day now. I think it's intended to go into a submission.
Let me just ask, yeah. Have the staff got this report? No. Okay.
Yeah. Well, it's because we have Professor Skelton here, and I thought it would be better for the people if they could have some response to it. But another alternative would be to have it get given in a written response sort of... I mean, I...
Peter, what...
I'm not trying to put him on the spot.
No, sorry. I'm just trying to do this as legally and as fairly as possible. A report has arrived via one councillor and it's been distributed, and I've actually just seen it this morning.
Right.
And it is obviously the work of consultants associated with irrigation companies.
Which was one of the groups that we interviewed.
That's right. Yeah. And so you're being expected to answer quite detailed questions in response to that, and I find that rather unfair.
I'm not worried about the fairness of it. It's just that I'm not able to. I haven't come with that information available to me. What I'm saying to you is, though, that, you know, people will disagree, and they're free to disagree. The end result, however, is going to be the same.
Right, Michael?
Because the minister's made his decision now.
Absolutely.
Mm. A couple of things, just to add to that. I think
we could argue till doomsday about who's right and who's wrong over allocation proportions. That'll be a matter for your planning process.
Thank you.
Mm. Professor Skelton, first of all, thank you for your report. And I particularly note on page 37, I think it was, your assent to the decisions that were made around this council table last year. And thank you for that too. I think it was an important affirmation. On that particular issue, I think you should be given a copy of the recommendations, and then if you care to respond, that would be wonderful. But I think... we can't just give it to you without you having a look at it and having the chance to assess it and then provide it. So I hope that we do that today.
Yep.
I've got a question to ask you, and that really is getting back to the nitty-gritty now, which is that your recommendations, sir, and the Minister's response to them. Mm. Essentially, he's agreed to every recommendation that you've made, which is great, bar one, and that's how we process the deemed permit issue.
Yes.
Now, it seems to me, and I want, if you could just tell me if I've got this right or I've got this wrong, it seems to me that you're suggesting it for a particular reason, and I'll come to that in a second. I'm really interested to explore your rationale as to why you made that recommendation to essentially roll over those deemed permits until 2025, so just that issue, that's the first thing. But the Minister's response is, I don't want to do it your way, Peter. I want to do it this way because I've got practical problems with doing it the way you suggest. Is your interpretation of what the Minister has decided, and you will have read his letter to us, that's just a process issue, it's not a policy issue? In other words, do it this way, what I'm suggesting. Is that correct? Rather than the way that you've suggested.
In my report, I set out some reasons why I was recommending that, in the hope that that might give the Minister the necessary reasons to accept that recommendation. That didn't work. And I've had discussions with him about that. I accept, and it was he who came, well, I mean, I knew about the other alternative, about promoting a quick plan change to put that policy for short-term consents in place. And I think I discussed it at some point. I'm not sure. I didn't discuss it in the report so much because I thought that the minister's advisers were in agreement with me about my recommendation. Now, I think the minister's position, and I shouldn't probably speak for him, but yeah, I think it's mainly a process issue. And I say mainly because more than once, and I think he's said it publicly more than once, you know, they've had 30 years, or nearly 30 years. I'm not going to give them any more. And I think politically, from his point of view, that might be an issue. If he has to promote another bill now, he can't get it into the current RMA bill, so he's got to do it in another way. It's election year. It's very difficult for ministers to get, as Marion will know and you will know, to get time in the legislative program in an election year. I think that he would have a hard job to do that.
Right. I accept that unreservedly, and that's fine.
And that's why we've come for this other.
And that's what I'm just saying. So he's just saying, it's not that I'm opposed to what you're saying in principle, or even in policy. It's just that this will be a more effective practice. Put it back to the IRC, do a quick plan change, roll it over, and off you go, rather than waste my time or the House's time doing something different. Is that right?
Rather than trying to get legislative time,
yeah,
I think.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Mm. No, that's all I wanted to hear. Thank you very much, sir, and thank you for your report.
Andrew, and then Gretchen, and then Gary.
Thanks, Mr. Skelton, for being here today. And it touches on my question, touches on the issue that Councillor Laws has just raised about the Minister not agreeing 100% with your recommendation. So I suppose knowing what you know now, that isn't an option, would have you given us any other advice, direction in and around developing an interim plan change that you can share with us, knowing the main reason I'm asking you this is the wealth of experience that you've had, the knowledge with other regional councils, whether there's anything that you can share with us that may help to guide us when we develop that interim plan change?
Yeah, well, as I said before, if that had been the case, I probably would have discussed and made a recommendation to you along those lines. Short-term consents. I mean, we did discuss that in the course of my investigations with various parties. That's the only alternative way of dealing with this issue. To provide the interim period to get the other plans in place. And we actually did that in Canterbury, we had a policy framework that enabled us to grant short-term consents, and we did that with some of the big irrigation companies, actually, in Canterbury. Pending getting the land and water regional plan in place, which provided for a new water allocation regime. So we did it, and we did it in practice. The thing that you're lacking here is the policy framework to enable that. And that plan change is intended to give you that policy framework, so that the decision makers on those resource consents can say, in accordance with the policy, these consents will be for 5 years, or whatever the term is that you finally hit upon. You need to have a policy basis for that. Otherwise, you're vulnerable to, in the consenting process, you're vulnerable to appeal. So if I had been recommending that, I would have been doing it along those lines, saying you've got to stiffen up your policy and have a policy framework that enables your consent decision makers to provide for those short-term consents. And there have to be reasons for that. It's not an arbitrary thing. So does that answer your question?
That helps. And I think you're putting the emphasis on the long game, the big picture, to influence the short-term decision-making.
Yes, yes, yeah.
Thanks, Peter. Yeah.
Otherwise, we'll never, you know, if we get there. The long game is a different game from...
This immediate one. Mm. Gretchen?
I guess you've probably spoken about what I'm going to ask already, but just clarity, and we're in a public meeting. And thank you very much for the work that you've done as well. I think this has been very helpful for this council, and as you said, could put us in a really good position to be a leader, which is great. However, basically, where we're at is that the finding is that the Otago region does not have a fit-for-purpose planning framework in place, which essentially is quite serious, the finding that we're not performing our functions, which then leads a minister potentially to look at sections of the Act if we don't follow through at this point of 25, whether he points someone else to do the job better than we are,
that's right,
or directs us to do some plan changes. So it's not really an option, like you said. We've been told what we need to do, even though they're recommendations.
Well, he's politely
telling you. Yeah, which is great, okay? We know where we stand, so we've cleared that up.
It's not too subtle, really.
No, it's not all that subtle. And then we have some suggestion in the community that, okay, what we could do next then is make a role in our water plan to make the extension of term of these dam permits just a permitted activity, and we just continue as normal until 2025, when we'll have different planning framework in place. But I was wondering, in your perspective, is that what would be expected, or... would be useful, given that 2025, as you said, is a different picture. It's a different planning framework. Just interesting for the community to know what the end game looks like. So, making permitted activity...
make what a permitted activity?
Well, yeah, I think that's the question, isn't it? It's basically to make what people are doing at the moment with their deemed permits the same until 2025. So I guess that's the rate of take, I'm not actually sure. This is a question we've been asked.
Yeah, that's a good question.
Yeah.
Have you thought about it?
No.
You don't have to. That's
nor have I.
Yeah.
So what you're saying is a suggestion that you'd put a rule in, put a rule in the current plan by way of a plan change, saying that all existing water consents will be permitted, the takes from all existing water consents will be permitted activity until 2025.
That's the takes, not the actual amount, you know, that was on paper. This is the actual takes.
The actual takes, which you would get from the measurements from the,
in the last 10 years, 5 years, how many years would you go?
It would have to be over a period of time.
Because they're all different. There are different periods of time here, aren't there?
Yeah. Would you go back 5-10 years?
Did we?
Would you go back for getting an average of takes?
Oh, the average. Yeah, we went back 5 or 4.
It ended up being 5 at the finish, I think.
Did it? Yeah, over the... Was it
previous? 2009 to 2013.
9 to 13, it was.
Thank you.
But that was a 5-year.
Okay, before
we took an average of that.
Hang on. Okay, thank you. Is that right, Gretchen? Gary, followed by Kate, followed by Alexa.
I think there are dangers. I think there are dangers in that process.
I guess my question, if it's more directly, is it that simple, or are there a lot of complexities when you're addressing consents?
I think you'd have a huge argument on you.
Okay, I've got Gary, then I've got Alexa, and I've missed somebody then. Okay, thank you.
I was purely around explanation. The ORAG work that was done by consultants was sent to me for some reason, I don't know why. I had the choice then of how do I share that. Since the Skelton and Constantine reports have come public on our agenda, my phone has been ringing red hot from concerned people across the community. I chose to share the ORAG report with councillors only. I went back to ORAG and said it is not my place to share the report and work that you have engaged with the Chief Executive. I think you need to formally provide it to the Chief Executive, and then the Chief Executive is able to then provide it to Professor Skelton and others. So I left that position with the Chair of ORAG, but I did choose to share it with councillors today to help inform the discussion today. I just wanted to explain that.
Thank you. Alexa.
This might be a naive question, Peter, but one of the big concerns we're hearing from the community is that infrastructure can't be advanced under the short time frames that we're thinking about, and that large-scale investments and things like dams or irrigation infrastructure can't happen. Now, what was unlikely to be permitted in these short, you know, they're not bankable, basically. So is that the direction we're actually going? Are we actually trying to move beyond those sorts of infrastructures in the long term?
Well, I think the point is that the buying time to put in place a robust planning regime which will enable those things to happen, but in a more controlled way. I mean, you know, for the last 28 years or whatever it is, water takes for irrigation have been uncontrolled virtually. Except to the extent that some of them have limits.
How do you think we sort of engage in a discussion when we are holding people up, so to speak?
I think you acknowledge that you would be holding them up. Yeah. I mean, that's the truth of the matter. Holding them up in order to put in place the process, the rules that will enable better control of the use of the resource than there has been in the past. Now, there's no point in running away from that, because if you don't do that, you'll never catch up, and you'll never achieve the national policy statement. And you know, 20 years from now, you'll still be arguing about it.
Do you want to talk about the Canterbury experience with the water quality issues? Because it was the farmers there that were raising similar issues at the beginning. And as we went through an education process or just a consultation process, the super tanker started to turn around. They got the message in the finish. They understood why, because at the beginning it was exactly the same. There was fear of the unknown. Once they started to see that the council was engaging with them, understood the business models they were working to, but was able to explain, we don't have any options here but to change some things, they started then talking about time. How much time can you give us to change our businesses? And that became the focus of much of the discussion that we had. And I'm talking about weeks of meetings, night after night, with different farming groups, different interest groups. But there was a focus on an outcome that eventually everybody bought into.
Did you have contested science?
Oh, yes.
Oh, yes.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely we did. Right. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, there were... one lot of people wanted to... oh, I forget the figures now, but yeah, our issues were more water quality than water quantity, because we already had some water allocations in place and various different. There was still some over allocation that had to be dealt with, as the national policy statement requires. And I I want to emphasise that, to give effect to the national policy statement, you've got to deal with these over-allocations. But yes, undoubtedly we did have contested, hotly contested scientific.
How did you resolve that, Peter?
That was resolved by the hearing panel.
Okay.
Hmm.
So a council would come down and say, this is what we accept. It then goes up and it's contested in front of the hearing panel.
Yeah, the council, if I'll go back to the team thing.
Yeah.
It's terribly important that you have a team that works on this. And it's not just planners.
Yeah.
There'll be your science people.
Absolutely.
and all the others who feed into that, because that team, with you setting the policy framework, the policy parameters,
yeah,
will prepare the instrument, which they will then go and support in front of the hearing panel. And they will produce their science, which they'll produce to you when you're formulating your policy. And that'll be your case that goes to the hearing panel, to the independent hearing panel.
Right.
And other submitters who have other views, and ORAD might well be one of those, will have their experts as well.
Yep.
And they'll fight it out in front of the hearing panel in the normal litigation mode. To the extent that they don't reach agreement. You know, and sometimes agreements are reached.
And it can always be called in.
Hmm?
And it can always be called in.
I wouldn't.
It's all right.
You won't need to call these in because this is the process that the ministers. I'm talking now about you. I'm not talking about the deemed permit change.
You're talking further.
Your new regional plan,
that's right,
won't have to be called in. It will follow the compulsory process that I outlined to you
at the beginning
earlier.
Thank you.
And it will go to the independent hearing panel appointed partly by the minister and partly by this council.
Right. Thank you. Kate?
Thank you, Kia ora, for your report. Just understanding, I've got two questions that I want to focus on. One is why you suggested an average of the 5 years rather than a maximum, because given the situation...
Well, because circumstances vary from year to year.
Yeah, an average would limit, would reduce the take.
May not.
It's the average.
It's the average.
But a maximum flow take in a year does nothing to reduce it. I would have thought a maximum flow in any year of the last five is greater than the average of the last 5 years. And I'm just wondering why an average has been suggested rather than a maximum.
I think it's a matter of fairness.
So that in the process of moving from a deemed permit by this plan change, it is fair to reduce the potential take without...
Well it depends what you're trying. If you're trying to achieve more water in the river...
Yeah.
That's the way you're going to have to do it, isn't it? They're going to have to reduce their take.
Well, yes, except for I think the purpose of what we're trying to do here is to ensure that we do the big picture water plan and not get water users appealing the initial plan change. And that's what I'm just trying to understand is in the initial plan change one.
The deemed permit change,
yes,
that won't do an allocation, will it?
Well, that's what's been suggested in the report, I'm sorry, I had understood that that's what you suggested was a five-year average.
No, that's the staff thinking.
Okay, you talked about a five-year average in Canterbury, that was the next stage.
No, the five-year average in Canterbury, or 4 years it was, was to try and get a handle on nutrient discharges.
Okay.
This was a water quality issue.
It was a quality issue.
Okay, so it's different. Okay.
And that became the limit that a farmer could
That's fine. It wasn't a quantity thing. Thank you. I misunderstood that, Brian.
Yeah.
So at the moment, a quantity issue has been suggested, and I'm
In the deemed permit plan change?
Yes.
It's been suggested, Peter, in the paper that,
oh, yeah,
that I read.
It's not your suggestion, sorry.
No.
It's the same principle, though. It's the same principle, isn't it? That, you know, in terms of nitrogen load or water load, in terms of a short-term agreement.
It was part of sending a signal to consent holders that things are likely to change, and this is the first, but it's a very small step, that you go from what you currently have on paper to what you've taken, averaged over, and no one's yet defined what that average is. Is it the average over 5 years? Is it maxima? We just haven't gone there. We just simply put in the paper average, and if you see in brackets after it, yet to be determined.
Yes, it does.
We just didn't want to go into any of that space until we had some clear instructions from the council.
But unfortunately, paragraph 14's in there, and that's why I have to ask the question. The other part is, and can I just understand, and I may be picking up this up the wrong way, but we've got Fish and Game here, we've got other consultants, and Forest and Bird, and we've farmers interested in the cost of doing this consultation, and I appreciate Iwi will also be in the room. How did Canterbury facilitate the energy and the positivity of continuing on those discussions, given that some have been engaging in that for the last 10 years, trying to get some of these matters resolved, in my understanding?
Have they?
Yeah.
Well, you just got to keep...
There were no incentives or...
Well, the incentive is if you want... If you want to be... if you want certain outcomes to be considered anyway, whether they're achieved in the end depends on how it goes. But if you're not in the tent, you've got no show.
No, I appreciate
that. So you've got to be in the tent, don't you?
Yeah. So, well, then the next question would be the online consultation that's been suggested on this plan change, would that be seen as the best way of facilitating that discussion?
I don't know about
that. No. Okay, thank you.
No.
Peter, we have 25 minutes in which we're going to make a decision. I want to thank you very much. Is there anything finally that you want to say to us, except from best of luck?
Certainly that. And my message is, I come back to the message, you've got an opportunity to do things really well here.
Thank you.
And the Minister's aware of that. And you know, I wish you the best of luck in achieving that.
Thank you very much, Peter, and I really value, and I'm sure you'll be around for us to pick your brains at various other times.
Thank you.
Thank you, and your experience. Really appreciate your coming down. Council, we have 25 minutes. I want you to go to the paper, which is a response to section 24A, and note that this is what the recommendation is. Notes the following: the community engagement and consultation outlined in paragraph 17, their overall timeline, and the council approved a full review of the water plan in October. And it approves the following, and this is the approval: the development of a water permits plan change in according with the principles outlined in paragraph 13, not paragraph 14, in paragraph 13. The timeline set out in Appendix 2 for the water permits plan change and a review of the regional policy statement for Otago. And then finally, requests that staff prepare a formal response to Minister Parker's letter for consideration of the council meeting on the 11th of December. Do you want me to take it notes, then approves, then requests, or do we take it all together? Can I have an expression? Michael?
I'd like to move all three recommendations.
Okay.
That we note, et cetera, on page one.
Yep.
And that we approve A, B, and C, and request the staff to prepare a formal response. I'm glad you've taken us back to that, Madam Chair. I'm keen to hear those motions debated, put and passed.
Okay. Can I have a seconder for Dean Dat? Brian, thank you.
Madam Chair, can I ask a question?
Absolutely, love. Go for it.
I want to ask a question of Joe. And just going back to paragraph 13.
Yep.
A, B, C, D, and E. Those principles that are outlined there, how different are they when you process a water permit today, tomorrow, or next week?
Sorry, just point of clarification, that is compared to what's in the current plan?
Correct.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Those principles outlined there are straightforward in terms of what that new bigger picture plan would be looking at.
So the current regime clearly we've got a current water plan, but we've got an influence of the National Policy Statement and NES, etc. So I was just trying to ascertain whether if you dealt with a water permit today, would those principles outlined in paragraph 13 be the same thinking that potentially we will have in an interim plan change rules that we notify potentially in February next year?
Correct answers, yes. Yeah. So, I mean, the principles are what we're going to be looking to put into the new plan change, which would guide those decisions that we would make, yeah, which in the aim is to make this an easier process for all involved, yeah.
So there's quite an influence, obviously, on the bigger picture stuff coming through on that. Yeah, okay. Thank you.
Any comments on the end of the table? Yeah. Is that all right? Understood? Yep. Michael?
I've got an amendment to Principle 13, to just a minor one, but it'll just clarify something. And then I've got two other motions to move in connection with this.
So you're foreshadowing some?
Yes, I am. So if I could do that now, 13B... the principle, water allocation should be based upon existing water use, not paper allocation.
Can I just ask for clarification? Is there any, does that make any difference to that particular? No?
No, it won't, but it just, it'll clarify.
Okay.
So it's in. It's
are people happy to just adopt that, just actual, put on existing?
Actual or existing?
Yeah.
Existing.
On existing water use, not paper allocation. Leave that in?
Yeah.
Yep.
All right. Good.
Then we've if you're happy people in the room, we've included that in?
In the motion.
Well, it's in the principles.
Yep.
Okay. Now we move to the two foreshadowed motions.
For develop a community engagement and consultation program.
What the hell are you?
Sorry, this is an additional four recommendations.
Oh, I see. So this is under approves the following.
Yeah, so after three, request that. And then four.
Oh, I get you.
Develop a community engagement and consultation program to be tendered to the next council meeting that includes the active participation of elected members. Happy to talk to that.
Can I just have a clarification?
Yes, Jen.
Are you referring to between now and the workshop in January, or are you preferring post-notification?
When you'll have this to the workshop, yeah. Yeah.
But the engagement is post-workshop, is it?
We will have already engaged.
Yeah. So I'm asking, is your...
No, you haven't presented... Yep. Can I explain, Aaron?
Yeah, go for it, and then we'll just see if we've got this.
There is no community engagement program in this paper. What we're asking for, we're not asking for, what we're moving a motion for, is we want to know, because it's been botched so regularly beforehand, we want to know what the community, we want to have a community engagement program put in front of us that will include elected members being part of that as well.
The date of that community engagement
so
begins
when?
So it can
go to the workshop, but it doesn't matter, they can start developing it now.
No, it's not the developing. Sorry, people, can I have you listening too? The community engagement program is from now, or is it from January?
Oh, no, from now.
From now.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah.
So we will have already commenced engagement prior to next council meeting.
Good. We want to know what you're doing.
Yeah.
And we want to be able to approve it.
Okay.
after the
approval. The approval piece is difficult. Really,
so if I can just give you some indications in terms of the timing. So we're aiming for a February notification. There are statutory processes clause 3 and 4 of the, or 4A of the first schedule that require us to do particular things. Clause 4A is consultation with iwi that has to happen on a developed plan change. Clause 3 is mandatory consultation with ministers, TAs, holders of customary marine titles, etc. Those timeframes mean we have to have a draft plan change by mid-January, which means we have to do the consultation in the next 2 weeks to be able to hit the notification to avoid the issues for consent.
Okay, then I want to see it at the next council meeting.
We will have already have done most of the consultation.
Yeah, that's fine, right. But at least we'll know what you're doing and be able to contribute to it, and if we want to amend it, we can.
So we have outlined in the paper we're proposing, and I discussed this earlier, an online forum. We've acknowledged that
it is not... You don't have to explain this now.
The best.
You're going to provide for us that if this remit passes at the next council meeting, so we know what you're doing, and we can review it, and then we can add or subtract or amend if necessary. Okay.
I think if I can, it's just important to understand, and that's the only point we're trying to make, which is that we will have done a lot of this by the time we bring it to the council meeting. And so you've asked to approve something that will have already been done. If you don't like it, or you think we should have done something different, the opportunity for that will have largely passed and we'll get into difficulty.
No.
I'm just foreshadowing that.
And I'm just foreshadowing, no, we won't. Because you are doing what you need to do to statutory do what you need to do, but ongoing consultation is still going to be required into particularly affected communities, and we want to be able to have, as governance personnel, some sort of input into what that might look like.
So you want to see what has been done?
What has been done, and then also going forward, also, Alexa, after the next council meeting as well.
Madam Chair, I think Councillor Lawless is also saying that in this period leading up to the next meeting, if our communities are really keen to see councillors taking hold of these issues, not doing operational stuff, but being aware of what's happening and where necessary being part of those
meetings
and supporting staff through this process. So that's... I'm certainly want to be in a position where we can, where you feel appropriate, assist and help put what we're trying to achieve to the communities.
Just before I call this, what I don't, I'll call this one, and then I need to hear the fifth one, so that because we're sitting in a no man's land procedurally at the moment. Just a response to that.
Sorry. I just want to just in terms of clarification. I just want to sort of emphasise here. So given the timeframes prior to Christmas, this is engagement with stakeholders and community around...
You turn on your thing, love.
...around the potential options in the plan change. That is likely to be online, given the timeframes, OK? We won't be able to have face-to-face meetings with a large number of members of the community just because it's in the next 3 weeks. Right? So we will definitely, I guess, make you aware where we are going face-to-face meetings, but it will predominantly in the next few weeks be an online process. Once we've had our workshop in January with you as council around the proposed plan change, we go through into a formal process, which we are required to do, and definitely from there on in, I guess there will be opportunities, more opportunities. What's the other one?
We're talking about cross purposes at the moment,
yep.
Marion. You're doing a consultation process with interested parties. We're interested to know what that looks like, so that's the paper that we're asking for.
Yep.
We're also looking forward to the consultation that happens after the next council meeting with the wider community, and we may decide that online is not the way to go, or it needs to be augmented. It needs to be augmented by other meetings. Can I give you an example? On December the 5th, Gary Kelleher and I are having a meeting with the Lowburn community to talk specifically about deemed permits and in reaction to what is occurring here in these papers which are now public. This will be a common refrain throughout the Cadrona, Manukau, Kia Arrow, but also other catchments as well. And we're going to need to have a communications program going forward. So that's what we're asking for.
I think that's understood.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Can we have number five, please?
And the number five is provide a step-by-step guide as to how consents will be handled by ORC consents in the interim. So I'm still looking for a sort of a wiring program of how you're going to process the consents prior to we making decisions on this, and then obviously as part of that there'll be a question of how to do it.
Peter, can I have your response to that? Because we just before I go to you, can I just ask you, you've done some thinking about this, haven't you?
This is a consent. Sorry.
Yep. I still want Peter, sorry. Peter?
I can do it this way. There has been some thinking done
around
how it's going to be, how the council will process these applications.
And that's okay. The best thing is and then across to the consent stand.
Just a point of clarification. So it's how they'll be handled until the point of notification of any short-term plan.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Okay.
So we just really need to know how will it go in terms of practice.
Yeah, and is that for a paper or just some feedback at the next?
No, if you could do a paper for us, just so we can get the wiring program. Thanks very much.
Thank you.
Thank
right,
you.
Now I'm going to ask the mover and seconder, are you happy to include 4 and 5
yes.
in the... Okay.
Happy both.
Alexa?
So I have one other thing in here. I wondered why in the key principles there's nothing ecological or environmental in terms of water allocation. It should be based on water use, not paper allocation. I get that. Should it not also be based on health of rivers, or is that contained somewhere else?
We're trying to keep this as narrow as possible as per the Minister's recommendation. It'd be worthwhile remembering that we still have Plan 6AA and the Omnibus plan.
And that's where those will sit, and the
so
regional.
That's where you might see wider implications, changes made.
Have I got any more questions or queries? I'm very happy, therefore, that we put the motion.
Oh, sorry.
Hillary?
Aren't we getting to speak to it?
Well, yes, but I just looked up and couldn't see
well,
anybody
you said
moving.
If you hadn't got any questions. I thought we were into anyway.
All right, go for it, Hillary.
I've got a couple of perhaps observations or hopes or whatever. One of them is that I was slightly concerned that while we've got these key principles that we're just about to put in place, that people have been saying, well, the first one is the important thing. We must focus on the big picture. And when I say both the minister and in here as a key principle, there's efficiency in time and cost for people to engage with this process, the response appears to be, don't be too concerned about that, let's focus on the big picture. Actually, that is the big picture partially for the people who will be affected by this. So it is really important to me that that is both in there and is not just in there in the sort of also-rans at the bottom of the page. It's in there as genuine, and it does speak to the minister saying that he is predicating this on it being an efficient and good process for the people who are involved in it. Good, isn't it? Sort of. The second thing that's a little bit worrying to me is I don't totally understand where the workshop on, amazingly, the 7th of January fits in with a consultation process or whatever, because to me, a workshop is not something that gives people, should give staff any comfort about where we go, because it isn't a decision-making part of the process, and it's not, I'm guessing, intended to be done in public. So if we're doing our thinking at a workshop and people out in the world don't know where we're coming from or what we've been told that colours our thinking, then we're making a behind-closed-doors workshop part of a process. So if that is going to be, yes, part of a process, as Councillor Deka has just suggested, that workshop should be a public workshop so as that people know what we're being told, what we're thinking, where we're going with it. So I would like to, I don't know whether that's a proposal in here
it
or whatever.
It actually sits, I'd have to say, it sits outside the motion in front of us. Bringing up about the workshop sits outside that.
I thought we were approving the timeline and things.
We are approving the timeline set out in Appendix 2, and I just went to have a look at that.
And the timeline says a workshop on the 7th of January.
It does.
Oh, can we have that in public if we're approving that?
Sorry, we just think that there may be a legal privilege problem with having it in public, but we don't want to tell you that on the fly.
Well, in can that we come case, back? I mean, can we come back to that?
It's in this.
I know motion. It's in there. It doesn't say in there whether it's public or private.
Well, it matters to me.
I know it matters to you.
This
is enough for you to vote against it. It's not saying that.
Well, not if we can now address whether
they have just said that they can't.
No, and we can have most of it in public and have a public excluded bit of it. And the mover of the motion is happy to add
it's all right, Hillary, didn't play those games. Just been suggested something for me which says you could have the answer to that on the 11th of December. Would that be all right? Which is a question about the privilege or the not privilege.
Yeah, whether or not.
And then you could decide to split part and part.
Which would then be done by 7th of January. Rather than decide it now on the fly, which is worrying me. Okay. Any other speeches? And remember, you only speak once on this. Kevin? Followed by Brian.
Thanks, Professor Skelton. I was on the peripherals of the Lower Waitaki Zone Committee, and when all that went through and the process to me, the engagement that we had with communities and work was exceptional, and I hope we can replicate that through here, and I'm sure we will. The time is now to actually do it. This five-year thing does really, really irk me, but the reality is, as Professor Skelton said, that this is the time to take a breath, get things tidied up, and I won't go back and blame anyone, but what's happened's happened. We need to tidy it up now, but we will need, as councillors, to support our staff right through this process and ensure that we are communicating the right messages to our communities, and that is absolutely critical. So we need to be here to help. The two wee concerns that I have, which will be big concerns to our users, will be the cost, and I'd like some work done on that, will be the cost now to get my deemed permit ticking over for 5 years, and then what you're going to sting me in 5 years' time. And I haven't got a deemed permit, but I can hear people saying that to me. And what I am concerned about is how the figure that we use for the volume of water that we can take if we do, in fact, have the drought that I'm predicting next year. So the figures that we have, we've just got to be careful on how we get those. But the time is now to take the breath. Let's get everything tidied up. Let's get ORC going all together in the right direction.
Thank you, Kevin. Brian, Andrew, Michael.
Yeah, I'll just briefly say that, firstly, I respect the timeline expectation by the Minister. Secondly, I agree that a new water plan is the best vehicle for water management into the future, and I look forward to having a fit-for-purpose planning framework, and that's the national policy statement that central government's promoting, our responsibility in terms of a foundation in the RPS and working from that, a new water plan, and as Professor Scouten and others have said, the consents, sustainable consents, should then fall out on that context. I think what we're promoting here is pragmatic. Let's get on with it. I support it. Thank you.
Thank you, Brian. Andrew?
Thanks, Madam Chair. Just 4 points, and thank you for the additional recommendations, Council Laws. Consultation, just remember, first step of consultation is preliminary, helps to develop the interim rules. Second step, into the statutory process. Yep, no, we understand that. Trust, I think there's an opportunity here for the elected arm with the recommendation 4 to build trust with the staff, shoulder to shoulder with the community, really, really important. Also an opportunity for governance to take ownership of this plan change as we work towards finalising it sometime in February, because the ultimate would be for this council to approve that notification unanimously, and if we can work towards that, that would be fantastic. I didn't have a fourth point. That's it. Sorry.
I love you, Andrew. Michael?
First of all, I just want to say, given we're in public session, I'd like personally to issue an apology to the community who are going to be affected by us not doing our job properly. Not this council, but the reality is the Otago Regional Council has failed in its responsibility to the communities that we serve, which is why we're here today doing this. And it's time for us to step up and not only acknowledge that, but also to apologise to those communities who are going to go through further upset and anxiety as a consequence of us not doing our job in the past, and I mean that as a collective. And I'd like to apologise to my six new councillors who have found themselves in a crisis situation having just got elected to this council. It does seem a little unfair that you're going to have to be pulling a certain number of fires out of the, or irons out of the fire. Which leads me to the second point, and that is this. There is further community unease, expectation, upset, anxiety. It's absolutely understandable. We're talking about people's livelihoods here, and we're not just talking about them as individuals in small communities, but towns and regions as well. So communication is critical. I think in the past we have poorly communicated, and that's because the governance team have not been actively involved in that communication. We have got to be at the forefront of communicating this plan change and everything going forward. And I will be talking further on that issue and setting up a structure to try and achieve that. And thirdly, can I say to Professor Skelton, who is here, thank you, sir. We needed this. I'm really quite reassured in many ways to say that there are other councils worse than we are. I think that's quite useful, because we don't need to beat ourselves up too much, because other councils are in similar states, one expects, and I imagine that's true. Central government hasn't trusted local government for a long time, and boy, are we giving them further ammunition not to. But your report, I think, will serve the basis of it. All we want is science-based, fact-based policy. That's all the community asks for, and that's all they want, and you've reminded that of this, sir, and I thank you very much for that. I think we're going to head in the right direction. I know that we can do it. We have no choice but to do it, and I look forward to us getting on with the job. Thank you, sir.
Any further speakers? Gretchen?
I just wanted to say, probably following on from the previous speaker as well, that regardless of where regional councils have been, which perhaps, yes, we haven't moved at a speed that we could have, the planning setting has changed, and 2025 will be a very different picture from where we are now. That's the reality. And we all need to adjust and do things differently to reach 2025 and what our picture looks like for Otago. So whatever happens, we had a lot of work to do. I feel positively about the plan that the staff have put together. For possibly the first time, actually, that I've been on the council, I feel that we've got a really clear work program that we can actually put to the community and say, well, this is what we've got ahead of us. It's quite daunting. It is daunting for the community, all stakeholders. We all need to invest in this, because 2025 is really important. It's really important socially, economically, environmentally and culturally, and it's different. And so there's going to be some hardship, actually, along the way for some people. It is going to be different. And that's a reality, but we need to walk together along that journey, and as we've said already, see the science, see the facts, be aware, together, because that is the only way that we're going to be able to get there together, is to see it for ourselves. So we've got a lot of work to do, but I'm positive.
Thank you, Gretchen. Carmen, followed by Michael.
Thank you. I just want to echo those last two. It is a different landscape, and in some ways it's quite horrible. You know, if you're out there in that rural community,
it's really, really tricky. So much has been put on people. But I think Michael Lawters has it right, Councillor Lawters. It's how we tell the community and what we do, and it has to be really clear. Our communication is absolutely must be so pertinent on this matter. Just like to say thanks.
Thank you. Michael, do you having that?
Exercise my right of reply.
Yes, go for it.
Which will end the discussion.
Yes, I've got that message.
All right. Yep. thanks, Madam Chair. Thanks, Councillor Lawters, for those amendments. I agree with all the amendments by addendum. And I want to say, as others have too, to Peter Skelton sitting behind me, I think he's done a thundering good job. Peter, you've been open with us in the times you've been with us, and that's been great. You were particularly open and frank today, and I really appreciated that. Overall, this has been a good exercise. Others have portrayed it as a council in crisis, a council under the gun, a council threatened with being sacked. I never saw anything like that, and Peter never saw it anything like that. So where that came from, God only knows. Probably political. I also wanted just to finish up by saying that I have the feeling that Councillor Lawters can apologise to anybody he chooses to, for himself or something else, but he can't speak for this council or the previous council or the one before that. You may, Madam Chair, if you choose to apologise to anybody for this council, that's your business. But no individual councillor can take that privilege or responsibility or duty so self-perceived on himself. I certainly wouldn't. But anyway, I hope that this motion carries easily. It's a good one. It sets us on the right path. Right.
Okay, darlings. It has been moved and seconded. There are two people who have withdrawn from the table. Thank you, both of you, Kate and Gary, and thank you for your properness, propriety. All those in favour, please say aye.
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 And against? Have I got a unanimous vote?
Mm. Taking your wall.
Should we clap? Bloody marvellous. Well done, people. Thank you very much. Holy shit. Sorry. Can we close the meeting now? We reopen it at 1 o'clock as a finance committee. You're in the chair, darling. I'm going to have fun. All those. Okay. Thank you. I declare the meeting closed. She's put